Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable.
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of West Hollywood, California, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
We back like the Buffalo Bills. Dark time, Dave-o, not going to lie, feeling it a little bit. Just a castaway, an island lost at sea. I've never understood what Sting meant more than when he said, "Guess I'm not alone in being alone." Oh my God, it's a time of agony, Dave, as we pod.
Well, I'm looking forward to talk. I don't want to start talking about this too early, Rog, because I want to give you some, I want to try and uplift you. I want to try and soothe you. I want to try and make you feel better about this, but I don't want to start doing that too early, or it'll give you too much time to rain on that.
I'm just kind of shocked. I like to pretend that I watch so much football that I'm almost inured to it. You know, on to the next game. Oh, Augsburg are playing. Got to get ready for that. You know, that it doesn't impact me. But I'm not going to lie. I have struggled around the house, just eaten up by Everton's ongoing disintegration. It hurts. I just want to make that clear. If you watched the Dallas Cowboys game this weekend, did you watch that down the stretch?
Yeah.
And just saw every memed, shocked, traumatized Cowboys fan in that fourth quarter. I just want to warn you, I am like all of them combined into one human being.
Rog, I love the idea that you think that there are people who think that you don't really care about football and that you don't really care about what happens to Everton Football Club. There's no one in the world who believes that you don't care about literally every single game and every single kick of every single ball that Everton make.
Just as long as you don't tell publicly anyone that each meme dropped by Brother Nige into the WhatsApp group he's entitled Everton Are Crap stings like another lash onto already flayed skin. I do want to thank GFOP Matthew McAllister, a great man, for sending me a line of comfort from Camus' return to Tipasa in the midst of winter. I found there was within me an invincible summer. Two invincible summers still to come, Dave-o. God, we deserve an invincible summer, do we ever, Dave-o? But let's dive in. Huge pod ahead.
Two quick bulletins coming in off the Men in Blazers
hot
newswire.
Beep, coming
beep,
in
beep,
hot.
Beep, 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 beep. The first Sunday's truly uplifting Men in Blazers show featuring the great Will Ferrell is now available on Peacock TV. Will Ferrell, Rog. Will Ferrell.
Did he do Get Happy?
Oh, no, sorry, Will Ferrell.
Yeah, him.
Will Ferrell.
I think Ferrell. Will Ferrell is a French winger that Burnley are coming in for. We're talking about...
He's not bad. Guillaume Ferrell. He's very good.
We're talking about Billy Ferrell.
And that was on Peacock TV, Rog. This Sunday, another all-new episode featuring a treat for Man United fans. We'll take a look at the 2012-2013 season, Fergie's final campaign, and the last time United won the Premier League title.
United fans, we know this current season. It's not been the one you were hoping for. So we come in peace and love with an offering that we hope will cheer you up. It was incredible to look back on this season, the coda to one of the truly great dynastic eras in sport. And Dave-o, this episode also features a riveting conversation with a bloke who has a take on everything about the future of football in the United States of America and the world. It's Dallas Mavs owner Mark Cuban who joins me.
Roger, a wonderful interview in which you get some insight into the difference between American sports ownership and that of European football. GFOPs, a reminder that both of these shows and every show from this season is available on that exotic bird network, Peacock. Roger, can we get a tourist?
Oh, what a raise. Oh, my third first bud of the day to Alfonso Davies, who over the weekend was diagnosed with a COVID-19 caused inflammation of the heart muscle, a quote, mild myocarditis. Huge, huge, by the way, respect to the Bayern Munich medical staff for identifying it early. Fonzi will now regrettably be out for that epic US-Canada rumble at the end of January in CONCACAF qualifying, but it's by the by. Bud fam, blood fam, to Alfonso Davies. We wish him a speedy return to full health. The world is a better place when that gent is bringing the joy on and off the field. Courage.
To the football, or lack thereof. Another weekend in which two matches had to be postponed. Had to be postponed due to COVID. Well, COVID won, but had to be postponed. Burnley versus Leicester was called off Friday. Burnley are never going to get relegated because they have too many games to make up, Rog. They'll still be playing next fall. And then early Saturday afternoon in Britain, news broke that Sunday's North London derby had also been called off. Arsenal submitted the postponement request on the heels of their Carabao Cup tie with Liverpool, which was played Thursday. They cited a squad depleted by COVID, injuries, and because of players at the African Cup of Nations. Spurs were publicly furious and issued a statement to that effect in response. A lot to sift through here, Rog.
Yeah, something about this did not sit right. As Gary Neville, Sky's face of the Premier League punditry, tweeted, "Game off. What started out as postponements due to a pandemic has now become about clubs not having their best team. The Premier League must stop this now, draw a line in the sand and say all games go ahead unless you have an exceptional amount of COVID cases. It's wrong." And can't disagree with him, Dave. Not only wrong, but it's creating a Premier League where teams like Spurs and Burnley have four games in hand on some of those around them. And we don't know the rules for cancellations. They've not been published or made public. Medical confidentiality means there's a vagueness always to what we do know and understand. But it is getting hard to comprehend why some teams can get permission to cancel the game while others are forced to play. Self-interest is charged to be creeping into it. The rules seem to be interpreted so widely. Arsenal had, at time of cancellation, one known case of COVID. Players off with injury, yes, and AFCON, yes. But why they were allowed when clubs have such deep youth academies? I think someone calculated Arsenal have 83 pro players on their books, Dave. They have a whole team of under 23s and under 18s, but couldn't muster a team against Spurs. You look at Bayern Munich, who unfold a bench with zero Bundesliga appearances. I think Leeds had a 15-year-old on their bench to make the show go on. Do you understand it?
No, I don't at all. And the rule has not been equally applied. You know, clubs like Chelsea have played every single game, but I don't complain about that. I think they should play every single game, whoever they have to play. So I think it's less about the unequal application than they're allowing, you know, almost any of these teams. I mean, I understand with the Burnleys, it's a very different situation. The squads are tiny and they have huge COVID outbreaks. They can't field the team. You don't want to make a mockery of the league. But even Arsenal's request to not play the game, to postpone the game, cited not the COVID injuries, as you said, it cited that they'd lost players to AFCON and they'd lost players to injury.
Spurs seething, and when it is rescheduled, that North London derby is going to be spicier and more hard fought than ever.
Well, one game not rescheduled, Man City 1, Chelsea 0. The high priest of Pep effectively administers the last rites to Chelsea's title challenge in a massive sky blue victory at the Etihad. City had the better of the ball throughout, and what was a pretty midfield dominated game went close in the first half when Jack Grealish was denied one-on-one by Basque backup keeper Kepa. Chelsea flickered early in the second half and Croatian Jay-Z Young Cove slipped in Big Rom, who saw the whites of Edison's eyes just before the Brazilian shut the door on him, parrying his shot away. And in the 70th minute, we witnessed the game's real moment of class when Kev took a Cancelo ball, plunged into the heart of the Chelsea defence and unleashed a blast that no Arrizabalaga in the world could have saved. In the end, City go 11 points clear atop the table with their 12th straight win.
Massive game, first and second, champions of England facing the champions of Europe. You're never saying that. Think of it in non-footballing terms as if Kanye and Pete Davidson were arm wrestling. Season defining. David, did you feel that ahead of kickoff that all the pressure was on Chelsea? You know, 6 points ahead of City, entering November. And now for like lose and just out of the title race, which would, you know, even 2 months ago naively assume was a groovy threesome. Did you think, gosh, yeah, we have to win or it'll be over?
Yeah, I thought it was and actually, you know, less about feeling the pressure. I thought it was a huge opportunity for Chelsea to go there and you know, and offensively take it to them. I was very surprised at the lineup that TT selected before the game. You know, this is the first time, I think, ever that Mason Mount has been available to play and start a Premier League game, and he wasn't given the shot, which seemed odd. He seemed to cite his form in the Carabao Cup game, and I thought he played great against Tottenham. And he played wide of Lukaku, Ziyech, and, you know, Christian, both of whom, yes, we desperately want them to come good, but both of whom have been struggling for consistent form this season.
Thomas Tuchel said before the game, "We will hunt them down and make them underperform," sounding eerily like a U-boat captain as the Battle of the Atlantic was tilting in the Allies' favour. And God bless the Chelsea fans, sort of energise their boys by bursting into champions of Europe while holding up their inflatable Champions League trophies to goad City as their players began to face up to City's buzzsaw press. And Pep's mob sought to smother their opponents when Chelsea had the ball. You know, they tried to almost just charge forward in a frenzy before City could suffocate all the space. I said the one I was surprised about from a Chelsea lineup perspective was honestly Big Rom, a gent who has looked so isolated in big games. You remember, he started so potently this season, then totally disappeared in Chelsea's 1-0 defeat to City back in September and has really struggled against the big six throughout. In England, they call him flat track bully, which is really a harsh smear. And Tuchel spent much of the week trying to persuade everyone that Lukaku could thrive in his system, placed him right on the shoulders of City's high line favouring defenders. But then Chelsea's players kept knocking it towards him with back-to-goal hold-up play demanded of him rather than giving it to his feet to run at his opponents. Did you understand it? Did you even like it, David?
Well, no, I didn't like it at all. And look, Chelsea are hampered with Reece James and Ben Chilwell out. They're hampered with their two, you know, best wing-backs. So that hurts Chelsea and it hurts the, you know, the chemistry throughout the midfield.
But watching Rom, it's like they've brought a very expensive piece of electronic equipment, but they couldn't be asked to read the instruction manual. Just trying to work out how to use it by pressing the buttons. We've all done it.
Yeah, and they also mishit. I mean, had the balls gone into him, be one thing, but, you know, the balls were just missing all over the place. And when Rom did have the ball, he was guilty, as his manager, who was very quick to throw him under the bus afterwards, he kept on giving it away.
There was that move on 10 minutes where Rom shrugged off stones, rumbled in. You're like, yes, this is it. We will hunt them down. And instead, he decided to pass to an offside Ziyech. You know, just that was, to me, just Boris Johnson level decision making, David. Just a massive opportunity blow and made worse by the fact that no matter who plays alongside Lukaku, Kai Havertz, Pulisic, Timo, or Hakim, they all seem dead inside around him.
Yeah, I think Timo and Havertz look better next to him than, you know, having, you know, Christian and Ziyech so isolated on either side of him with no one to back them up, no wing backs to back them up behind. But yeah, it was just once again another offensively very unimaginative and disappointing performance by Chelsea, which is becoming the norm in the league under TT.
And City just seems so ominously confident, just waiting for a mistake, sending Raz and Alonso at every opportunity. Raz playing as if he had a sweet pair of clocks. Wallabies on, just dancing around this prey. And the mistake came. Kova, with his back to his own goal, blindly spanked a pass. And Grealish suddenly found himself one-on-one with Kepa. I mean, God, the tiny shin pad. This is what's amazing about City. Just that tiny shin padded expensive wonder tried to lift the ball over Kepa. Credit the goalie. It was like an NHL save, just going starfish. Mm-hmm. But the difference between the two clubs is exemplified in that moment, Dave. Grealish can flail in his first year. And all we say is, oh, yeah, it's gonna take him at least a season to get it right, like Mahrez. And Lukaku flails, and it's just a symbol of imminent Chelsea disaster.
Yeah, No, City are a very different offensive outfit. Liverpool, a very different offensive outfit. Multiple players who can hurt you from midfield, from the flanks, straight down the middle. And, you know, Lukaku, like a, you know, a lumbering piece of artillery, if you, as you've described him before.
He's like a run-and-gun unit on a team who demand that he play like a big-bodied centre that he's just not. And by the way, those who laughed at Grealish in this moment, the size of his transfer fee, the lack of product, you just misunderstand fundamentally what City brought him to do. They didn't expect for the 100 million plus goals or assists. They just brought him over just to get Phil Foden laid. Pulisic flicking. Pulisic flickering without any real impact by receiving a stamp on his shin from Cancelo. Laws of the game. You can do whatever you want to Christian. You know, it was arguably Cancelo, I think, said to the referee it was shin to stud. A fairly anonymous appearance for Pooley. Is that fair? That the delirious memories of the days when Christian charged right through the City backline and scored to help Liverpool win the title in fanless Project Restart days. God, they seem an age ago, David.
Yeah, although I would say, in fairness, one, he wasn't as bad as Ziyech, and two, he had very little service behind him and very little space being created by anybody else running up front. And if your game plan is going to be to hunt them down, Christian isn't really the player you use for that. That's not his.
Jaeger! That's Christian, not his great. Jaeger!
That's not his great strength as a player.
Second half, Chelsea had one big opportunity. Again, it fell to Lukaku, slipped through by Kova. Opened his body wide and tried to magnificently arc it round Edison, only for the keeper to react brilliantly, made a difficult save. Were you out of the chair in that moment?
Yeah, sort of. But I think I would have been more out of the chair and shocked if he'd put it in the back of the net at that point. I mean, to be really honest.
Is that what it's got to? You're like, oh, it's wrong. It's, it's not going to happen.
Be really honest. I wasn't seeing either of these teams score a goal until that moment of magic that came later in the half.
Yeah, by the way, we need to acknowledge if that goal had gone in, we might be talking about a completely different Gwyneth Paltrow sliding doors world completely. Instead, City just stepped up, caressed one exquisite cross after another into the spot where their striker should be, while Chelsea were largely unable to get the ball to theirs for the rest of the game. There were moments when Raz would run at the back line, who'd prod the ball away frantically. It would just end up at Foden's feet. He would charge on in or slip in Bernardo. It was just wave after wave after wave of creative destroyers, Dave Owen, in the 70th minute. A moment of genius. KDB. Single-handedly split the Chelsea defence like it was Lisa Bonet and Jason Momoa.
And N'Golo Kante, very rare for him, got caught on the wrong side of the ball, tried to chase down KDB to zero effect, which I think you noted was just a very odd thing to watch.
Incredible thing.
And KDB just, I mean, he was, I think, pretty much trying to foul him and didn't even make that.
Yes!
KDB somehow got the ball out of his feet. I mean, it's just not a shot. It's not a goal you see very often. And he managed to sort of get it out of his instep. Kepa falled, moving right. And the ball goes to his left and curls inside the post. Beautiful, beautiful goal. And I'm not sure there are many other players in the Premier League who can score that one.
Only KDB. I mean, not just the shot, but as you say, to shrug off N'Golo Kante as if he was Andre Gomez. I mean, Kante tried to foul him too. It was like Maradona's goal against England in 1986, he ran through the whole of the England team. And afterwards, they did an inquest on BBC and they asked one of the English defenders, I think it was Terry Butcher, I might be wrong. I think, why did you not try and foul Diego and bring him down? And I just remember that whoever the England player was, he just sadly said, I did. Like, I tried, but I couldn't. And that's N'Golo bloody Kante. Just undoubtedly, I hate the FIFA awards. I think they're ridiculous. The best. But it was fascinating. The best players in the world, when asked who the best players in the world, almost all the best players in the world had N'Golo Kante in the top three. He is the player's player, and he was shrugged off in this moment, you know, and the Chelsea defenders, once N'Golo Kante had been eviscerated, just quaked in KDB's presence, backed off, left him to unleash a searing Elvis Costello of a strike. His aim is true, both poetic and clinical. Fifth goal scored by De Bruyne against Chelsea. They were the most he's netted against any team. Not only was he humiliated and discarded by Mourinho, but you remember the Champions League final last season, Rudiger battering him, ending up with a fractured eye socket.
Bad game for him.
Some revenge, huh?
Yeah, it was a great moment. And just a beautiful piece of football that lit up what was, let's face it, not a particularly good game of football.
Give Kevin the Ballon d'Orange now. That arguably a goal fit to win a title. God, a Chelsea midfield with KDB playing alongside Conor Gallagher. What could be? Chelsea, they, I mean, I thought Rudiger was magnificent in this game, but it really, big picture, 1-0 only served to underline an enormous gulf between City and Chelsea. Pep, who normally is like, good. Pep, post-game, could not help himself but crow that his squad had allowed just one shot on goal against the Chelsea in 180 minutes of football. A statistic which is utterly flabbergasting there, because Chelsea kind of had to win this game, but ultimately could barely raise a fist.
Yeah, but not flabbergasting, because this is what Tuchel's Chelsea have done again and again and again. Even in games which they dominate possession, they fail to get shots, and they certainly fail to get shots on target. You know, there was a time when you could win the Premier League. In fact, we expected teams to win the Premier League. Certainly the Arsenal of the 1970s and 80s, we expected them to win based on defence, based on not conceding. Those days are over. In the era of Man City and Liverpool, you've got to win with offence. And you know, Chelsea right now are built to win cups. They're not built to win a league.
Daniel's story captured the sad truth of Chelsea's season, which it can only be described as Arizona cardinally so far. And I say that with real sadness for J-Dubs and his dad. Oh, my heart broke watching the Cardinals go down with all hands last night. This stat, Chelsea, Davo, have now played 10 matches against teams in ninth or higher, and they've only won two of those, which is staggering, considering the depth of squad at Tuchel's disposal. City, though, one hand, two if we're being honest, but we've got to say just one hand on their fourth title in 5 years. Just a different class. 12 straight wins. Honestly, watching this, Davo, it's like as if boxing had been suddenly upturned by a boxer who developed his own weight class. Just, I am an ultra heavyweight and could fight in new dimensions that other, you know, purely just great heavyweights could not compete with. So much money poured in before financial fair play, really. $2 billion to build a squad which is without peer or weakness. Fuse that, yes, City fans, with the just the incredible way the club has been run by Ferran Soriano, and City fans, yes, managed by streets ahead Pep Guardiola. Yeah, that much ballyhooed three-horse title race now seems misguided. City, Davo, they're almost making a joke of the Premier League's competitive balance. They're so far ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, Liverpool and, to some extent, Chelsea definitely blinked at just the wrong time. And, you know, very, very tough to see City losing from here.
Rebecca Lowe had to joke at the full-time whistle. She was almost mournful in her voice. She said, please keep watching us. We've got the relegation situation. David, are we turning into Germany, Bayern, France, PSG, you know, England, City?
I mean, it depends. I mean, how long will it really go on? You expect teams to react and do better. Certainly hasn't happened yet. So I think it's a little bit too early to call, but that's the danger.
You know, I look at Ferran Soriano, who I just mentioned, who runs the club. So the decision-making is so brilliant. You look at Newcastle with a huge money influx, their decision-making, absolutely the inverse. The one thing that can prevent this, Pep Guardiola will burn out, and who replaces him will determine whether Premier League becomes competitive again. It's almost a tribute to City that they are making this look so cohesive, so strategic, so effortless. It's so hard to do what Pep does, breed consistent excellence without complacency.
Yeah, winter is unimaginable in summer. When you look out at your garden, you see the grass and you see the trees, the butterflies flying around. You can't imagine winter, but it does tend to come. And the opposite, Roger. The opposite does tend to come also.
I'm just going to repeat that Camus quote. In the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer.
Well, hate to break it to you, Liverpool 3, Brentford 0. The team that is keeping the embers of the title race burning, Rog, Liverpool Football Club. They treated the bees like an active recovery day at the gym. Fabinho started the scoring just before halftime with a back post header off a corner that Brentford allowed to bounce. And Ox in the box, diving header, and Tacky Tap in made it 3. The Klopps move into second, 11 points behind City, but with a game in hand.
Liverpool, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, were our only hope of a title race going into this one. Brentford, the mighty bees, could not have been repelled better if Liverpool had been armed with citronella candles. This was no wins in three, Liverpool. Taken to the field without, please sign soon, Mo. And Mane, both at the long-dreaded AFCON and the 33 goals that they took with them. Both men missing at the same time. This is incredible. For the first time since 2017, that front three of Ox, Jota, Crazy Bobby, you know, the really ersatz Mane Salah attack. But it was ultimately a good job. It was just listing Brentford, not the Brentford of our imagination. Losers of three of their last four. This one, never in doubt. Brentford's midfield ceded the battle from the off. Interesting that they're linked this week to Christian Eriksen, yeah, adding to their Danish cohort and arriving on a possible six-month contract, which would be just joyous to witness. Liverpool essentially set up camp in Brentford's box, forcing a battery of corners near misses. Hendo and Jota took turns to pot shot, calibrate their aim on the Brentford goal. Brentford's plan, really rope-a-dope, defend deep with numbers, hoping that the longer the game went on, the more panic. No Mo, no Mane, who's going to score? But the only Liverpudlian being frustrated, Davo, was a female Liverpool fan who was sitting too close to the on-field microphones. GFOP at Tobo Donkey called her Karen of the Cop. She was just so angry. Every time Liverpool failed to pass forward, she kept shouting, lazy pass, she kept going. And wrong way, whenever they passed back to Verge to reset. Wrong way, it was honestly, it was like Mystery Science Theatre. She was just seething. At a certain point, half an hour in, she just started to seethe in a frenzy about that big bastard at the back for Brentford. Honestly, I was listening to her. I was like, oh my God, she probably has what it takes to be the next Everton manager.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced it was a woman. I don't think we should be assuming her gender. But it's, fascinating stuff, Rog.
It was
just the mentality of the fans. By the way, we've all heard them at games. It's just the, you know, every time the ball goes backwards and fans going insane. It's, yeah.
We laugh at the fans. But the honest truth is, a mate of mine worked as the sound man on Amazon's All or Nothing, the Manchester City season. And they wired up the dugout during the Man City Everton game. And they said they couldn't use any of the footage because it was just Sam Allardyce for 90 minutes going, hey, you bastard! And his own players, how do I? You bastard! You daft bastard! You brush! It's not just the fans, mate. And then the stroke, oh, you bastard! Stroke it at half time, though. The Brentford rope and came a cropper, let a Liverpool corner bounce in the 6-yard box. Fabinho there with his beautiful bald head like the end of a pool cue, well chalked to nod it home. Three of that man's 7 goals for Liverpool been netted in the last 8 days. And the second half was a stroll. Even Tacky scored on his birthday. You know, confidence that they can play without Mo and Mane. Klopp said beautifully after his 350th Liverpool match in charge, when I arrived, the picture looked completely different. It's been intense since then. Each little thing you do is really worth it. It's like a family. We are far away from finishing the book. We will keep writing and see where we end up.
Yeah, game in hand, but 11 points behind, Rog.
And goal difference. Whoa.
Yeah, going to be tough to make up. Aston Villa 2, Manchester United 2. This was the game of the weekend. The club treating the transfer window like the real. Square up to United's new Batman and Robin, Ralph Rangnick, and the Boogie Down Bronx's Chris Armas. It was United who shot out to a 2-0 lead thanks to Bruno Fernandes, who tallied in the 6th and 67th minutes. But with Villa on the ropes, Stevie G chucked on his former teammate, the only man on that Barca to Birmingham flight who wouldn't have been returning from a stag do, the one and only Philippe Coutinho. And what a debut, Rog. First playing a part in Ramsey's well-taken strike, his first goal for Villa at home, and then in the 81st minute, scoring a diving header to tie things up. Really entertaining game of football at Villa Park.
Which was buzzing ahead of this one. Villa hadn't beaten Manchester United at home since 95, but now they had Stevie G, they had Lucas Digne at Kevin and Goyen 89. Oh, why don't you twist the knife, Kev? asked, is this the first ever transfer brokered by Cazoo and do they get commission? We'll talk more about that one, mate. Philippe Coutinho took a bow on the substitutes bench ahead of kickoff. The crowd went wild. And United, without Ronaldo, out of a hip injury, and Anthony Martial out because of not wanting to play at all, according to Ralph. Not even trying to master the chaos.
Yeah, bubbling. He's not even pretending he's got COVID or he's got an awareness. He just, I just don't feel like playing for United.
He has an awareness that he doesn't want to play for United anymore. But despite that, Ralph's mob started optimistically. Emi Martinez, a howler, gifted them a lead. Speculative long-range Bruno shot from a free kick. Should have been caught with ease. Instead, he went Argentinian Billy Buckner. And, God, I was the thing I was shocked at, other than the mistake, was Bruno just reeling away, celebrating like a madman, Davo. I mean, it was more such relief, which was really telling for Bruno. I think a once-potent wizard, just his second goal in 15 games.
Yeah, I mean, it meant a lot to United. I mean, it was sort of against the run of play. Aston Villa, I think, looked better up till that point. But obviously, things have been so tough at United, so tough for Bruno, that anything going his way, their way, feels like something worth celebrating.
At Paul Thies tweeted us, if Everton was a goalkeeper, but respect to Villa. By the way, bite your arm off for Everton to be like Emi Martinez, yeah, mate. Respect to Villa. Oh, who took the punch on the chin, responded by stepping up their intensity, but without John McGinn, they lacked the guile in midfield to unlock United, and Ollie Watkins and Danny Ings as a duo seem to somehow make both men lesser. Their greatest threat, and yes, this pained me, was debutant Lucas Digne.
Yeah,
He looked good, didn't he? He looked happy. Yeah, happy, David.
Yeah, it looked like he respected his manager, liked the environment.
Loves the car sponsor, Cazoo. Yeah. Secondhand cars, that's what makes him go. He just slapped crosses with poise and control. De Gea on his game, then multiple fine reflex saves. And in the second half, Villa began to run rampant. United suddenly leggy, couldn't grasp a foothold. Villa just seemed totally in control. They were about to throw on Coutinho, their little magician. The energy at Villa Park was crescendoing, but Davo, few men love to burst the bubble more than Bruno.
Yeah, it was one of those goals, as you said, against the run of play. Dallo, led the press. Seems to be a regular under Ranieri, playing with some confidence. Ball goes in. Fred knocks it back. Bruno, with that incredible strike, the strike of last season, Rog, hit it against the underside of the bar over the line.
No, technically it wasn't a hit. It's a lash. That was a lash. He didn't shoot it. He didn't hit it. That ball knows it was well and truly lashed. And, you know, Emmy was in a body bag before he even knew that the shot had come. And God love Bruno. Just, he's slightly heel-esque. He's got a cute face, but he loves to leave a little something in, a late tackle. He also loves to elaborate any contact that comes his way in an effort to get opponents booked. But when he actually turns his mind to, you know, actual football, we often forget this season, because he's lost his way a little bit. He is so bloody good. And this goal, an agony for Villa, so confounding. If I was a Villa fan, I'd be like, for the second straight game, we've outplayed a massive brand of an opponent and we're somehow trailing yet again. I actually wrote in my game notes, what an important win for Ralf Rangnick and United. They needed this. They needed this very badly. Huh. And by the time Coutinho did come on, 68th minute, I felt sad for him. The game was over. Felt cooked. But within 9 minutes, Philippe had made his presence felt. And what a moment, Dave. Slipping in 20-year-old spark plug, Jacob Ramsey.
Yeah, see, my game notes were just my texts with my tennis mates. And they were saying, Man United look good here. And I said, you know what? Usually when a team like United are 2-0 up, I think it's game over. But there's something about this game. I think Villa are going to come back into it.
Oh, what he must have felt, a kid who's been at Villa Park from the age of 6. Pulling one back against United, his first ever goal at home in front of fans who just adore a local hero. And within moments, he added his first assist. 82nd minute, rolling a ball perfectly across the 6-yard box. And who was there? to ram it home, Dave. 40 minutes on the field.
And amazingly, I thought he was going to impale himself on the post on the way through. But, you know, not only did he score the goal, he avoided the post, which I thought was even more impressive.
He's magic. He's magic.
What a debut. Why didn't Chelsea sign him? Like, why didn't everybody else sign him? It was perfect. He's a perfect Premier League player that we already knew because he was perfect before.
Living out Gandalf's truth, a wizard is never late, nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to. And my moment of the weekend in that celebration, Emi Martinez at the wrong end to celebrate with his teammates. His mistake led, of course, to that first goal. And he celebrated it by just turning round, jumping over the hoardings and diving into a mosh pit of Villa fans behind his own goal. And it was just an exquisite moment of everything that's good about football and redemption. A dream return for Coutinho, an important point for Steven Gerrard. Villa had lost 4 of 6 at home before this one. But for United, Davo, I know, it's all Chris Armas' fault. Frustration for the entire fan base yet again. In a week in which Ronaldo had said, Manchester United must come third. They're never coming third, are they, Davo?
Well, I mean, they're just as close to third as Liverpool are to the top, but it's going to be hard. There are all these teams above them, and Tottenham, who are a little bit resurgent. Arsenal, we know their form's improved. West Ham, who, other than their little hiccup this weekend, have been superb. It's just going to be really, really tough for them if they continue to play football like this. They were horrible as Aston Villa were coming back against them. This was not in any way United, like, they didn't control the game. There was no management of the game. They didn't have a single chance themselves. It was just very, very poor.
And Double R, God love him for his honesty. It's very difficult to find positives. We had spells when I felt it was our best game since I came here. We dominated in the first 30 minutes. We could have scored 2 or 3 goals, but we gave the ball away too many times. We are not compact. It feels like a defeat, to be honest. This was meant to be a run of soft winnable games in which Ralph could steady the ship, but they've tied with Newcastle, lost to Wolves, and now thrown away a 2-goal lead to Villa in 3 of their last 4. And the Daily Telegraph had one of the most savage analyses of what's going on in that United locker room. They wrote, most worryingly and least likely to change is the sense that the players have a license to misbehave, like school children smelling blood from a substitute teacher.
West Ham 2, Leeds United 3. Jack Harrison becomes the first Wake Forest Demon Deacon since Tim Duncan to score a Premier League hat-trick. The former Berkshire School, Manhattan Soccer Club and NYCFC man put Bielsa's boys ahead 3 separate times in this one. The final goal, a subtle chip, sealed points. West Ham are still 4th. Leeds, meanwhile, continue to free themselves from the relegation quicksand. Now 9 points clear of the drop. A big day for GFOP Jack Harrison in East London, Roger.
Up the Berkshire School Bears! What a game! What a feast! What a reward for Leeds, who have suffered so many bloody injuries. See the conversation at the top of this pod. But keep playing on. Bielsa, play on. Played a bench filled with teens. He didn't want to do it at Arsenal. He didn't want to change his never-stop-running way. And his team were rewarded against West Ham, playing their 3rd game themselves in the space of 8 days. Rafinha ran the Irons, injury hit backline ragged, and our friend, young Jack Harrison, became the first Leeds United player to score a league hat-trick against the Amers since Russell Wainscoat in April 1927. Feels only yesterday we were podding about that, Davo. What a beautiful sight it was as he smashed home his 3rd in the 60th minute. What a story. Remember, Jack Harrison's mum, Deborah, an incredible woman. She's a single mother who had the confidence, the foresight to yank Jack out of Manchester United Academy, age 14, you know, with the likes of Rashford he was there with. But she looked and understood the odds of a teenage kid actually making it to the Manchester United first team were so bloody slim. She decided to move into America so he could get an education. As you say, he went to the Berkshire School in Massachusetts, Wake Forest, MLS with NYCFC. And on Sunday, scored a hat-trick for Leeds, proving Robert Frost knew that when you take the road less travelled, Davo, it makes all the difference. There's so many paths to glory in life, right, Davo? And to me, it's Jack's path that makes him one of my favourite footballers in the world.
It's just a remarkable story. And the American connection makes it even more special, like especially for us and our GFOPs. And just delighted for him. And not only a great moment for him, a really valuable win for Leeds United. You know, in what is going to be, as Rebecca Lua is reminding us all, is going to be a very tight relegation battle.
Can I tell you something? When Jack last came on our show, right ahead of making his Premier League debut with Leeds, I actually emailed with his mum, Deborah, and I sent her the lines from that Robert Frost poem, Road Not Taken. And I emailed her something like, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that's made all the difference. And she wrote back to me, and I love this. She said, Jack had an old phys ed teacher named Dan McElroy. Dan, I hope you get to hear this. Dan McElroy from his secondary school, I think in Bolton in the United Kingdom, Turton School, if I remember rightly, where he was for a couple of years before he went to Massachusetts. And when Jack made the Premier League with Leeds, Dan sent him a brass compass with the Robert Frost poem engraved in it too. Football, Dave, football, poetry and life truth. That's what we saw with Jack Harrison at the weekend.
Beautiful, Rog. We're going to be back to get your take on Rafa Benitez's firing. That's after a quick word from the GFOPs at BetterHelp.
There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites, in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. Pause for music.
Brighton 1, Crystal Palace 1, a derby based more on music and style and bank holiday weekends than geography. Add in some ornithological spice and name it after a provincial British highway, and that is a proper English sports rivalry. This M23 tussle saw Brighton dominate the first half, but despite that dominance, this Patrick Vieira Palace team is tough as nails. They eventually broke the deadlock with a wonderful team goal capped by who else? Conor Gallagher. An 87th minute own goal did, however, level things up, and it ends honours even.
The unlikely rivalry was drama-filled, must-watch, despite the fact so many players from both sides were AFCON-ing. Tons of VAR drama in the first half. Penalties awarded, penalties missed, goals disallowed, all for Brighton. And then Palace stole the lead against a run of play. Who else? Conor Gallagher, the best son from Shameless, deftly finishing off a 22-pass move that began with the goalkeeper. And the finish could only be described from a Chelsea POV as Frank Lampard-esque.
Yeah.
Incredibly, ensuring Palace's fourth successive shot on target at the Amex. Incredibly, ensuring that Palace's fourth successive shot on target at the Amex ended up as a goal. I love that stat. Brighton, though, did what Brighton do, scoring late to tie things up here with an own goal off Anderson, their seventh goal in the last 10 minutes of a game this season. David, do you watch Conor Gallagher and think how he might fit into Tuchel's blunt Chelsea attack? Or do you think, stay where you are, lad, big scraggly-haired fish in a smaller Palace pond?
Yeah, I want Conor Gallagher to stay at Palace, maybe even for another season, and get even better. Right now, I don't know where he'd fit into Tuchel's system, because I think he plays better in a central role. But we'll have to see. Vieira's getting the most out of him. Poor Palace, so much drama this season. Another game that I just cannot believe they didn't win.
I'm sure. I think we know exactly where Tuchel would play him. We play him at wing back.
Yes, it's likely. It's very likely. Wolves 3, Southampton 1. Bruno Lage's team get their third win in 4 over the Middling Saints. A Raul Jimenez stutter step special from the spot. Connor Cody getting his no-nonsense noggin on a rebound. And an Adama Traore barnstormer cancel out an otherworldly free kick from that son of a barrister, James Ward-Prowse. Wolves, Rog, are just 6 points off fourth place West Ham, and they have 2 games in hand.
Connor Cody, first ever goal for Wolves. He's like the male Becky Sauerbrunn. I loved watching the Wolves team go mad when the player who's their heart and soul popped his gold cherry. Even the goalkeeper ran the whole pitch to celebrate that goal. Even more surprising, perhaps, Adama Traore scored his first goal of the season in the 91st minute to wrap up Wolves' third win in 4 Premier League games. And he celebrated beautifully. He ripped off his gloves to show he had another pair of gloves on underneath, pulling them to his face. They formed a black power fist. It was really beautiful to watch, Dave. His first goal since May 2021.
Newcastle 1, Watford 1. The canonisation of Saint-Maximin continues as the French artiste's emphatic strike had the toon headed for what would have been their second win of the season. But in the 87th minute, João Pedro absolutely big boyed Jamal Lascelles and headed home the equaliser. A massive goal in the context of the season as it keeps the Orns out of the relegation zone by just 1 point. Newcastle, meanwhile, drop into 19th place.
Newcastle unveiled new signing Chris Wood, who they took to weaken Burnley, get the goals they need to replace the injured Callum Wilson, all while allowing themselves to drop the pun in their signing tweet. Toon's got Wood. Piff, Davey, they're evidently just in it for the crack. And Wood started, but was largely kept quiet by Watford's own new signing, Brazilian Samir. So it's down to Alain Saint-Maximin. Sorry, as that guy Tyler calls him. His full name is actually Josh Alain Saint-Maximin, just a man who creates danger where there is absolutely no danger at all, scurrying into Ngakia, working the ball free, charging in, hell-bent on creating terror as he glided past multiple Watford defenders before drilling the ball home. Newcastle fans love players who give their all, and no one gives more repeatedly then Alan, and it all felt so good. Toon out of the bottom three. True joy within touching distance. Till 3 minutes to go. Oh, Newcastle have 21 points away from winning positions, and yet again, their joy turned to ashes in their mouth. Pedro heading home. A run of 7 straight defeats ended for Ranieri's team, though. Piff Castle, Davo, under Saudi Howe. 10 games, 1 win, 4 draws, 5 L's.
Okay, Rog, we got to do it. Norwich 2. Everton won 2 goals just 94 seconds apart from your own Michael Keane and Norwich's Adam Eder render a second half Ricky Arlison wonder strike obsolete. And Sunday, just about 24 hours after the final whistle blew, the sun set on Rafa Benitez's tenure at Goodison, a reign about as bright and as long as a winter day on Merseyside. The floor is yours.
Where to start, Dave? Where to start? Can I just begin by acknowledging publicly how glad I am that I didn't follow your advice and call my dog Marty Scorsese. You wanted me to call him Woofer Benitez.
Well, no, I didn't suggest the name. You at some point came up with a name, or one of our GFOPs came up with a name, and I thought it was hilarious, which I still do. I stand by that. It was comedy gold, and it would have been comedy gold had you called your dog Wolfer Benitez.
Oh, those would be some of the saddest dog walks of all time if I'd followed that advice. Come on, Wolfer. Come and have a crap, please. Come on, mate. Rog having to pick up Wolfer Benitez's craps for eternity. Just, I mean, the game, a relegation 6-pointer was what it felt like, a ginger off between Anthony Gordon and Josh Sargent. Who would have seen this result coming? Well, pretty well every Everton fan. After all, Norwich had gone 9.5 long hours without scoring a goal. They'd suffered 6 straight defeats. Was it not predictable?
that this game would turn out the way it did. Everton, less a footballing team, more a sporting Make-A-Wish foundation. And I predicted this in my Friday newsletter. And so the two goals in 90 seconds, first Josh Sargent, God bless him, new time first father, our baby Eagles having babies, spanked a low cross into, I think what for normal teams, Dave, is called, don't you call it the corridor of uncertainty?
Yeah.
But that corridor of uncertainty for Everton is simply called the entire field.
Yeah, the pitch.
Yeah, the pitch. Goodison. That's it. Yeah, or away ground.
In this case, Nakara Road.
Yeah, or anything with grass. You know, Michael Keane, God bless him, decided to make Josh Sargent's childhood dream come true by turning his ball into his own net. It was a terrible goal. And God bless Norwich City's Twitter account, which tweeted, Golazo! Which is amazing. And Norwich had only scored 8 times the entire season, so of course they scored again, straight from the kickoff. Again, Michael Keane should have cleared it, but he's clearly, Dave, I'm convinced Michael Keane is locked in some weird dance-off with Rondon to prove that, no, he is the crappiest player ever to pull an Everton shirt. He just chose to slowly fall over. And probably another charity case, 20-year-old Adam Ida could experience his first Premier League goal for the Canaries. And I'm happy for him. And then, David, an Everton fan who looked just like me.
A little bit like you.
Follow me. Just like me.
A little bit like you.
Stormed onto the field and tried to get to Rafa Benitez, who what? Also looks like me.
Yeah.
I mean, this was as close to the world's worst remake of Being John Malkovich as there could ever be.
I mean, there are a lot of people connected to Everton Football Club who look a lot like you, including yourself.
This was, I'm not sure if it was being Rog Bennett or being Benny Bennett, but it was just almost impossible to watch. I looked on in horror. I did. My wife took photos of me watching on. I could just think, why do I get out of bed so excited to watch, David? Am I in an abusive relationship? Would you be doing an intervention?
Yeah, I was also very upset that the Budweiser can was not on a coaster on that lovely, expensive-looking sofa. But yeah, it's an abusive relationship. I mean, you say that you predicted this happening before the game.
I did.
But Rog, you predict Everton losing every single weekend before the game. This isn't anything new. This is an abusive relationship. You have bought some of this. Some of this you've bought upon yourself by connecting, which, as I've said forever, you are not a better person when Everton win. You are not a worse person when Everton lose.
Much worse.
You are no, Rog. You are not. I've got to say this to you, mate. You are not a worse person. It's so important that we talk to football fans and we explain this. And by the way, football fans of any code, New England Patriots fan, you are not worse people now your team aren't winning anymore. You weren't great people when your team were winning. You're just the same people all along. It's just. It's that the lows are too low. The highs are too high.
When we let in two goals, I thought of Joni Mitchell's line, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone. And I thought of the good old days of mid-table obscurity, of Theo Walcott, you know, of Stevie Naismith, Ashley Williams, Sam Bloody Allardyce. Supporting Rafa Benitez at Everton, I tweeted this. It's like sailing on a ship. I'm being utterly powerless as you have to watch the captain pull out an incredibly large saw and very deliberately and with some amount of relish just start sawing an enormous hole in the stern. This is, I mean, watching him, honestly, I look at like Elizabeth Holmes and her Theranos leadership. I'm like, I would have loved that for my club. I only think Rafa is in, at this moment, I thought he was intentionally trying to kill me. And my Gunner friend Michael Cohen texted me in that moment. He just texted me and he knows, he wrote, football is pain with the odd orgasmic moment. And I wrote back to him that sadly it's just vinegar strokes for the last 10 years for his Everton fans. But then on came Rich Arlison. What did he do, David? What did Rich Arlison? Michael Cohen is a prophet.
He scored a worldie.
I mean, he scored an overhead kick from so far away that he was able to watch it go in from the ground as he was just lying on it. I'm not going to lie, I did piss in my pants just a little bit. I just thought Martin Tyler's orgasm, if he was commentating, would have been heard all around the world in that moment. But GFOP at Banter FC5 captured exactly what that goal would turn out to mean. He said, if Alanis Morissette was writing ironic today, she would write a line, bicycle kick at Norwich away, nominated for the Puskas, but they lost the damn game. That's exactly the kind of half-rhyme Morissette would bring to the table. And so we sat with the memories of Sheffield United's two wins last season, still an open wound. And Davo, You do it to yourself, you do, and that's what really hurts. You do it to yourself, just you and no one else. And I said at the final whistle, I just said with a groan, I said, what else in my life do I have like Everton that I love so bloody much and all it does is devastate me? And my daughter Zion just quietly mumbled, the Bears.
Yeah, both well, teams, she is right.
Both teams, coachless, rudderless, drifting without vision. I mean, how do you look at it? What, I mean, 200 days of Benitez in which he managed to lose to all the newly promoted teams. Well done, Rafa. That's some feat. Went on a one win in 13 run. To me, it was like watching a medical documentary in which a donor organ is rejected by the host body. Just the immune cells recognizing the transplanted heart as just completely different to the rest of the body and attempting to destroy it. But how do you look at it?
Look, I think he had this great start to the season that a lot of people, including quite a lot of Everton fans, got fooled that it was all going to be okay. He clearly
14 points in the first seven games.
Yeah, and then what, 5 points ever since. Clearly, he didn't get a performance out of the players at his disposal. Clearly, he had some injury problems, which were severe. I wonder, though, how well any other manager would have done with this squad, which seems to have been haphazardly put together, like combining 15 different jigsaw puzzles and not having enough pieces that fit in with each other.
I hate jigsaw puzzles.
Yeah, especially when they don't work. So I don't know. But I don't feel bad for Rafa. They paid him millions to go and do the job. And I think, as you've made the point, he didn't ever seem particularly passionate about the job anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we should say that, first of all, top level, Everton's players should be ashamed of themselves, apart from you, Anthony Gordon. All right, and you, Richarlison, when you came on. This was a shambolic performance. But you know, after this game, Rafa's position was untenable. He's essentially a Spanish Urban Meyer. And I will get to the real problem in a minute that you're prodding me towards. But we should say about Benitez, and I think you've nailed it, his crime to me was that he never stopped thinking that Everton was a small club, as he claimed after a derby in 2007. He carried himself at Everton when he was the manager here in those 200 days as if his contempt for the club had actually only increased after his arrival. You know, I think I'm projecting here, but I think he was shocked that we would hire him. Like the smallness that he detested and our neediness, that we were in such a precarious place that we needed him, that we'd even consider to hire him in the first place. I think that made him hate us. He hated us all the more from the inside than he did from the outside. And he didn't like us. And it was like a reflection of Everton's desperation that you need me. And you know, he was a fading Liverpool legend. That's what he is. And what he wanted was a short commute. He came on our show and I asked him, you know, I gave him an easy question about what's changed. You called Everton the small club. What's changed in your perception after you arrived? Most managers would be like, the club, I see the tradition, I feel how much it matters, it's a family. No, he didn't go, he didn't do any of that. He talked about how his wife loves Merseyside. She's settled there. She didn't want him heading off to China again. She didn't want him to go back to Italy. Essentially wanted a short bloody commute. And I bet you he couldn't believe that we, Everton, would be so vulnerable, cold, shame, lying naked on the floor like Natalie Imbruglia, that we offered him the job. And he hated us all the more that we did. But his blind spot to me, watching him, was that he never respected the club, its identity, certainly not its fans, Dave. We disgusted him. We still disgusted him. And to me, it was that contempt which cost him.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think it's an amazing piece of projection. And it's the sort of thing that fans think when they watch him. He didn't care about the club. But
and he hates us all the more because we needed him. But us needing him made him sick.
But the argument almost doesn't make sense, because if he really wanted a short commute, he certainly is not going to have a short commute anymore. It's going to be very tough for him to get another job in the Merseyside area.
Well, let me extend, you know, my thinking. Forward. Maybe he realised, this short commute's not so good.
Because of the commute, and then he changed his mind that he didn't like the commute.
For too much time at home, okay. Longer commute needed. But the real problem is the owner, as you're hinting, Farhad Moshiri, a billionaire who he's created a unique problem. I mean, within the culture of the club he owns, because he doesn't know what he doesn't know about football. And in the Premier League, you've got some clubs have owners with infinite money, right? And other clubs have owners who don't have enough. The odd, curious thing of Farhad Moshiri is that he has plenty of money.
Yeah.
And he spent generously, but he's done it all so almost frivolously. It's almost like he's just laundering money, one would think. playing only.
Lose anyway, as much as possible.
Yes. He's either that or playing at owning a football team with his mates in London. You speak to people in football and you hear that he runs a football club like other men spend time on with headsets in their underpants playing Call of Duty. He's just like that. He's got this whole infrastructure at Everton, directors of football, recruitment. He's just like, Bolasie scores a great goal for Palace. He's like, let's buy him for 35. Davy Klaassen looked good in that European game. Let's buy. Oh, Iwobi. What? He's a big six player. 35 million. Yes, we'll give you 40. And just blowing a fortune on ill-advised transfers, overriding all the football infrastructure that he's built in Merseyside. And so those directors of football, he's hires and fires. What's that old Hollywood adage, David? How do you make a million in the entertainment industry, arrive with a billion and be fleeced by every huckster in every studio? That's what he's doing.
Yeah. And all through it, as he's put this together, Everton haven't, under how many managers in 9 years, Rog, or 8 years? Nine managers in 8 years, eight managers in 9 years. Like, it's been a lot.
It's eight and a half since Moyes, and we've gone through permanently. It's like Ronald Martinez originally, Ronnie Koeman, Marco Silva. It's like a team sheet. Hey, Sam Allardyce. Hey, Carlo Ancelotti. Hey, and now Benitez. Many of whom were doomed failures before they'd even managed the game. But what did you finish your
it's
point?
It's just tough to think of a single playing style that has existed under any of those managers. When you think about playing styles across the league, if you had me explain, I'm not saying it would have to be the same under all those managers, but I'm not sure that I can really think of what the playing style Everton have had, what identity have they had as a football club. And so it sort of meant that there've been these wild swings in managers, there've been these like wild transfers, players that you don't really understand. Makes the emergence of Anthony Gordon even more incredible that such a good player has come up from the youth ranks.
I've told this story on the pod before, but I have a friend at another football club and they were negotiating with Farhad Moshiri and his team on a transfer and they were getting frustrated with the negotiating style. So they said, 35 million, take it or leave it. You got 24 hours. And Farhad Moshiri's team apparently came back the next day and said, we'll give you 40 million. And they just out-negotiated themselves. And the board just lack a single strategic footballing brain cell. I mean, look at this. Fired director of football, Marcel Brands, 5 weeks ago, 8 months after he'd just signed a hefty 3-year contract. And he took the head of recruitment and head of scouting with him. And by the way, why did you do this, Moshiri, to back a feuding Rafa Benitez? And then you fire Rafa anyway, 6 months into his 3-year contract, just a wasted, deeply damaging 6 months. And you do that having shipped out Lucas Digne, one of our best players, with whom Rafa had also fallen out 4 days earlier. I mean, we've lost our values. We have burnt cash in a garbage can and we've lost our identity in the process. And the question is, what do we do now, David? I've listed all the managers. Could we tried almost everything? I mean, we've done good manager of bad teams. We've done young up-and-comer. We've done aging legend. Where do we go from here? Should we just appoint a young former club legend with no experience? Or should we like look on Twitter and see, hey, that guy who sang the Hey Kino, Everton Italiano. he likes the club. Let's give him his shot. I mean,
yeah. Well, the problem.
What do we do? Because the next move, relegation is a real possibility if this next move goes quibby.
Look, the problem is if the fans have a very strong voice now in this club and, the board is going to want to make a popular decision. And sometimes the popular decision is not the one that's really going to work. You look at the managers. I was looking at the managers of the teams around Everton in the bottom half of the table. And you go down from Patrick Vieira in 11th and Hasenhüttl in 12th and Gerrard in 13th, Frank in 14th, Bielsa in 15th. The experience of Ranieri with Watford, Dean Smith, who's been through this battle a few times at Norwich. Once your favourite, Eddie Howe at Newcastle and Sean Dyche at Burnley, bottom of the table. So it's a lot of very good managers around. And the number one thing is they need somebody with experience to get them out of a relegation scrap. They got to pick up some points.
Let's go through the names that have been linked. You know, the most probably the most punishing one of all, psychologically, is Graham Potter. Because you realise...
He would never go to Everton.
Because?
Because he's got a better job at Brighton.
That's the most devastating truth of all. Why would Graham Potter leave a well-run club, a strategically run club, a really well-oiled club, to join our hot mess when he's got Arsenal or Spurs, you know, in his grasp? I mean, that's an absolutely ballistic. That tells you immediately what our level is. Graham Potter would not even think of it. I mean, by the way, 20 years ago, Everton was a massive job. And now, honestly, that's the moment of reality check. Brighton is currently a much better job than our burning hot mess. So we can run through them, David. I mean, talking about burning hot mess, Jose Mourinho. I mean, I wonder whether these links are just to lulls me.
I mean, the comedy value of that for this podcast would be unbelievable.
It'd
so
be a 10,
from a
it?
Content point of view, good for business, I would an 11, Rog. That's not even on any kind of scale. It would be so good. It can't possibly happen. Having said that, I would back Mourinho to make sure they don't get relegated.
He's not a relegation firefighter. I mean, the reality is, the simple question with Jose Mourinho is, and this is his calculation, how can I destroy something when it's already burnt itself to the ground? What am I supposed to do in those smouldering ashes? What do we do?
He would attract some players in January, though. But there's no way he's coming in. But yeah, anyway, Duncan Ferguson, he's going to take over on a temporary basis. So that's good.
Yeah, I love Duncan Ferguson. I adore Duncan Ferguson. He's a club legend. He has stayed. The test of time. I think he's an incredible human being. This, remember, is a man so passionate about Everton and so passionate about, well, many things. Famously, there was a brief court case in the last decade where his house was broken into by robbers who I believe were armed with a shotgun.
Oh, that's a mistake.
The robbers took Duncan Ferguson to court because he apparently pulled them back in when they were trying to escape, pulled in the robber back into his house when he was trying to escape by the shotgun, pulled him back through the window by the shotgun and beat the crap out of him. That's Duncan Ferguson. To me, I want to be clear, I think he can give us 2-3 incredible games. Let's not forget the great Chelsea memory where he lifted the ball boy. Passion alone in the modern game of tactics, data analysis, man management, sports science, not enough. I think he's the kind of guy who can get a team, you know, buzz for 2-3 games, screaming at them, then hugging them really hard, overly hard back slaps that make you wince. But beyond that, definitely not a long-term manager, Davo. When you hear, I'm interested, Rooney. When you hear Rooney, what do you think, my mate, Wayne?
I mean, Rooney, I think, you know, he's doing an amazing job at Derby County, by the way.
Incredible.
And, you know, if they would bring him in and really give him time, because I think the fans can get excited about Wayne Rooney, but how will you be if they lose 5 games on the spin? You know, it will be, you know, you can get your heart broken when your former legends come back and they don't do the job for you. Take it from me.
Yeah.
So it's
and by the way, Frank Lampard, as of this morning, also now thrown his hat very hard into the ring. I'm like, Wayne Rooney, first training session today, lads. I want you only to focus on shooting from the halfway line, boys. That's how we're going to score. God bless Wayne Rooney. And then the other one in there, our friend, another friend of the pod, Davo, Roberto Martinez, on a job share with Belgium.
Yeah, I mean, Martinez has experience. I mean, these are the three. I don't like the job share with Belgium. I think that's horrible. And once again, a really bad headline if that goes wrong.
Guys, it's a job share with Belgium, and we're going to work out of a WeWork in Antwerp,
Job sharing. Le 3-day week. Le weekend. I mean, honestly, the ideas I like the most are Wayne Rooney, and I'm surprised if it's true that Lampard really wants the job, because I think he's probably waiting for something that doesn't have quite as much pressure on it initially. But I think they would both do decent jobs. They motivate young players. They will play the players that I think that the fans are desperate to see. And they have some experience. I know Lampard's like, everybody's very down on Lampard, but you look at the job he did in that at Derby County, look at the job he did in his first season at Chelsea, and actually for a season and a half at Chelsea before it all went wrong for him over a period of 10 games. And I think he's still a very good manager in the Premier League.
When I heard Bobby Martinez, I'm just like, have we run out of ideas? Are we just like rebooting and going back to factory settings when we bought it? It's just, he's a nice man. And that's just like, oh, our last manager was not nice. Let's get a nice man. But oh my God, there were protests outside the ground last time Bobby Martinez was still the manager because he couldn't defend. And the game has only become more tactically complex since he left us. I will say, these names, none of them are particularly filling me with confidence. And I'm just like, we need evidence of a strategy. We need evidence of the owner knowing what he doesn't know and empowering others in the club to step in and really lead with their experience and really build a club infrastructure, or else this conversation, which is shocking. I mean, it's really, I want to know, it sucks. It really sucks right now. It's crappy. It's miserable. It just feels like we're being led by, I mean, it's like Boris Johnson level leadership, decision making, and it sucks for, as a fan, it sucks for a fan that has, you know, made many Americans, led them towards Everton, and I feel everybody's pain. Get Jim Harbaugh to be the manager of Everton Football Club.
But I'm gonna nail you to it, Rog. Who do you want to come in? You don't like any of the names. What would you like to see? Who are the names that would excite you?
I honestly care at this point who is going to be the director of football, who's going to building that whole infrastructure, getting some serious Everton needs designated drivers. and God, knowing Everton, knowing Everton, we're going to end up with Matt Bloody Nagy. All I know is our next game, of course, it's against Stevie G and Aston Villa.
Ugh.
Oh, Lucas Digne hat trick. Guaranteed, not in the face.
Rog, can we get one final toast with that exclamation point in a bottle, Jägermeister, to bring us home?
I want to raise this shot of Jägermeister, this bolt of human emotion in a glass, to something actually amazing. I want to end on a happier note that happened to me this week, a week in which it's just a brutal time. Let's be honest, as my daughter Zion told me and reminded me to be both an Everton and a Chicago Bears fan, both teams managerless, coachless, rudderless. Oh, there is no hope. But I fell in love, I thought about this a lot, with the Bears in 1984. And a season later, Everton Football Club won the league and the Bears won the Super Bowl. I remember saying to myself, how am I so blessed to support both of these powerhouses? And you know how things have gone. Both fired their coaches this week. Both just seem to be teams where hope and pain collide week in, week out. And then this Wednesday, night time, around 11 o'clock, my phone pinged. I looked down and it just said, it was a notification, Jim McMahon had followed me on Twitter. Chicago Bears Super Bowl winning quarterback Jim McMahon. And I honestly, just to be completely candid with you, I peed my pants when I saw it. You know, this was a man, Jim McMahon, who changed my life when I was a 14-year-old. He had this, exuded this punk rock tenacity, turned a Bears team that had been losers for decades, turned them into victors. And in doing so, proved it is possible to change who you are, to rewrite your identity. What you are does not mean that is what you are doomed to be. And I sent a screenshot of Jim McMahon's follow to all of my mates. And, you know, their joy when it happened, it felt like a tiny yet profound connection through space and time. If 14-year-old Rog could only know how life could pan out, would pan out, and that the internet would be created and would empower these connections, I'm sharing that with you now, listeners, especially Everton fans. Things can change. Things can get better. Please God, things will get better, to life, to love, and to the unpredictability of our journeys.
It will get better, Rog. And also, it's only football. You can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davis, at Rog Bennett. On Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davis. On Facebook, we are the Men in Blazers. On Twitch, go to twitch.tv/Men in Blazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balds win, balls win.
And take that, Gloria.
Balds lose.
To tweet.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Lucas Digne, not in the face.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.